Coming up on the Rami LaVie podcast, the Miami Heat are one win away from doing what everyone thought was impossible, making the finals with this team. Jimmy Butler is different than any superstar we've seen before. Speaking of, Nikola Jokic is different than any superstar I've seen ever. I'll tell you why. But why LeBron James and what he did was so special also in these playoffs. Also, we talked about the Knicks, their elimination, where they go from here. And I have a career update for you on my life. All that and a whole lot more coming up next on the 150th episode of the Rami LaVie podcast. Yeah, that's cool. Stay tuned. One of the things I talk about on this podcast a lot is the stigma against mental health. I think, unfortunately, there has been a stigma, but we're slowly breaking it. And if you think you might be feeling depressed, stressed, anxious, overwhelmed, or maybe you just want to talk to someone, today's sponsor, BetterHelp, is here to help you. BetterHelp offers licensed therapists who are trained to listen and help. Talk to your therapist in a private online environment at your convenience. There's a broad range of expertise in BetterHelp's 20,000 plus therapist network that may not be available in your area. You just fill out a questionnaire to help access your specific needs, and then you get matched with a therapist in under 48 hours. Plus, you can exchange unlimited text messages, and everything you share is completely confidential. So I talk about on this podcast how your mindset towards things changes everything. One of the things that I learned in therapy was that join the 2 million plus people who have taken charge of their mental health with an experienced BetterHelp therapist. Get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/Rami. That's my first name. That's BetterHelp, BetterHelp.com/Rami, my first name, Rami. If you use that link, the link is in the description in the podcast notes. If you use that link, you'll get 10% off and it'll also help me out. So please do that. I'm telling you, it's worth it. Do it today. Welcome back to the Rami LaVie podcast, episode 150. Yeah, I guess I did it. 150 episodes is quite a number, quite a milestone. And so I know I start a lot of episodes like this, but this is no different. I just have to start by thanking everyone who listens, who shares it with other people, who tells me that maybe I'm good at this, and or even better, gives me criticism and tells me what I can do better, because if it weren't for those people, I wouldn't be able to do this right now. It's everyone who listens, subscribes, shares it with a friend. So many cool things have happened and I want to talk about it. And it's not a coincidence that I'm doing this episode today. And that, considering the career update I have coming later on this episode, it is the 150th episode. Nothing happens by chance. That's what I believe in my life. There is some sort of higher power, I think. I don't know, but I think that. And this being more of like a benchmark episode and me having something to share, yeah, maybe I manipulated it a little bit, because I definitely was holding off both on recording this episode because I was busy, but definitely holding off on giving this career update, as I mentioned a few episodes ago. You can go listen back to that. And by the way, what I said on that episode is still very true. So if I find out, if I remember what number episode it was, I will go back and share it. But before we talk about me and my personal life and my my podcast and my career and all the different things that are going on, I want to talk about sports, because it's a sports podcast and that's what we do. And I think the number one story right now to talk about is the Miami Heat. The Miami Heat have been incredible. And you think about Miami sports in general, the kind of run that Miami, the Heat have been on, and obviously the Panthers have been on. Not allowed to talk about the Panthers. But a team that was, or two teams, depending on who's listening, that were number one seeds last year. Miami, the Heat, didn't disappoint in the playoffs, right? They made it to the conference finals. They ultimately lost to a better team in the Celtics, a team that everyone believed is a better team in the Celtics, still believes maybe is the better team in the Celtics. You come back this year, you're an eight seed, you barely sneak into the playoffs, you lose a wild card or a play-in game against, you lose a play-in game, obviously, against the Hawks, and then you come back, you win the next play-in game, and you've gotten this far. And this season, I mean, it's just so odd what's gone on this season with Miami. And all of a sudden, everyone's talking about Heat culture. Everyone's talking about Butler and what an incredible story he is. Eric Spoelstra and how special he is. But still, nobody expected this team to be here. This is one of the most unexpected runs that we've seen from a basketball team, or really a team in any sport, in a really long time. If they win tonight or in the next three games, they'd be the first team since the Knicks, and only the second team in history, But the first team since the shortened season Knicks did it to be an 8 seed to reach the NBA Finals. And the Knicks were only like 4 games behind the 1 seed that year, but it was like a shortened season, so the standings were weird. Jimmy Butler is one of the strangest stories I've seen in my lifetime. It's so odd. He's never been a top 5 player in the league. His regular seasons, we went through the numbers a few episodes ago. It's solid. Yeah, he's a solid regular season player. He's not great. He always misses time. He's going to miss, one of the things we went through, he's going to miss 20 games a year. And we'll talk about this with Embiid a little bit later, who Embiid has all this pressure on him. He's considered a loser because he's never made it past the second round in the playoffs. And he's this great regular season player, so we consider him a loser. But Jimmy Butler, who's never been a great, never considered a top 10 NBA regular season player at any point in his career, all of a sudden at this point in his career in his 30s, after having stops in Chicago, which didn't end well, Minnesota, Timberwolves, which didn't end well, and then also in Philadelphia, which didn't end well. After all those stops, he now comes to Miami, and all of a sudden we treat him like he's this god because every time he gets into the playoffs, it seems like he just takes over and he's incredible in the playoffs. That's not to say he wasn't that earlier in his career at other phases and other stages and other places, but it's unbelievable. Is there anyone like him in any sport that's just not the guy so much during the regular season, and then all of a sudden the playoffs show up and he's one of the best players in the league? In the playoffs, you'd want him over everyone. And this is what I talked about with my friend on that episode, I mentioned on that episode that I talked to my friend about this, was that you can't even look at his regular season anymore to define what he is to you and his value as a player. I mean, he hasn't won anything, and we don't look at him as a guy who, oh, wow, this is a guy who's a great player, is disappointed. Rather, we look at him, this is a guy who's a decent player, who's exceeded every expectation, and yet he says himself he's not a winner because he hasn't won anything yet. Right? That was the interview that I quoted from him. So it's the most odd thing when it comes to Jimmy Butler, and this might be the year he ultimately goes to the finals. It would be the second finals appearance. Obviously, the first one was in the bubble, which obviously the NBA tried to validate the bubble this year by having the same final 4 teams. Cool. I still don't think it validates the bubble. I think there's very different reasons, and I don't believe the NBA is scripted. I don't think it's scripted, at least, but there were different reasons why those teams made it then and why they made it now. But Miami, it's crazy the run they've been on, and you can look at them and say, well, I don't know, they beat Milwaukee without Giannis for 2.5 games. They beat the Knicks. The Knicks were a 5 seed. They were just happy to be there. The Heat were so injured in the regular season. They really should have been better in the regular season. There's so many different things to look at, but it's the same story every year, every postseason. When it comes to Jimmy Butler, he shows up in the playoffs, and Eric Spoelstra has just been doing this forever. He outcoached Budenholzer by far. He's outcoaching Joe Mazzulla by far. He also outcoached Tibbs, right? He outcoached Tom Thibodeau, but amazingly, it wasn't that bad. Like, in retrospect, the Knicks and Tibbs look better, and I'm always going to spin this to the Knicks story because I'm a Knicks fan. This is a New York podcast, but in retrospect, Tom Thibodeau and the Knicks didn't do that poorly considering what the Heat are doing right now to the Boston Celtics, who are a far more talented team. What they did, obviously, against a team with a championship and a championship pedigree and one of the best players in the world in Giannis, and obviously the coach who won a championship. Tibbs has never won a championship, but a coach who won a championship in Mike Budenholzer, what they did to Coach Bud and the Bucks got him fired ultimately, right? It seems like every time a team loses to the Heat, they're like, the team's like, I don't understand how we lost. It's crazy. We are better than them. And yet the Heat keep winning. And a huge part of that is Eric Spoelstra. You just see how in every game, in every series, he finds the weaknesses of the other team and he manipulates it perfectly. He never does the same thing twice. He's never going to come at you with the same look over and over again. He's showing you different things throughout a game, throughout a series, and it's what makes him an incredible coach. And the roster, because we talked about Jimmy Butler, but even in some games, Butler's, you see him like kind of taking it slow where he's like, I'm going to pace myself and then the fourth quarter, I'll turn it on. He's been able to do that because the roster, which we talked about before the Knicks series, not having a ton of depth, how it feels like, you know, Bam could have a great game here and there, and maybe you get a Lowry game here, maybe you get a Love game there, all these different things. In reality, this roster has been one of the most deep rosters, and every night it's been a group of guys contributing. Think about it. Caleb Martin, Kyle Lowry, like we mentioned, Bam Adebayo, Kevin Love, Gabe Vincent. They have freaking Zeller with his goggles, 90-year-old, and his freaking headband contributing. He's and his male pattern baldness. Duncan Robinson, who was not even in the rotation earlier in the year, and Max Strus all contributing. Strus is starting and having a great impact. Duncan Robinson hitting threes, and he's like the only weakness on defense, but the way they've been able to disguise their defenses, come at you with zones here and there, throw different things, that you start Robinson on Tatum, because we know that Tatum is going to be switch hunting. And it's like, oh, wait, now I'm confused. I have the guy that I'd want to get in a switch. So now if I do a pick and roll, he'd be off of me. He's going to switch away from me. How do I get him to stay on me? And all of a sudden, you just confuse everything that they're trying to do on the other end, and the Celtics couldn't adjust. All these different things, it comes from Spoelstra putting his players, putting these role guys in the best position to succeed. And a big storyline has been about the undrafted Heat players, right? All these guys are undrafted. It's not even so much about the draft, because Gabe Vincent said after the game, he's like, yeah, I'm tired of hearing about that, because who cares when we were drafted? He's like, the Heat didn't draft me either. It's not like the Heat drafted me. Right now, we're here. We're in the league. We made it. We're good. I think the point isn't so much that they're undrafted. It's that the Heat are taking players and they fit them. They have a certain system. They find the roles that fit best for the players. Kevin Love, in one game, he's struggling, so he sits down. Someone else comes in. It's always been someone stepping up in the perfect role in the perfect scenario for that game. And a big credit, obviously, to the Heat, but a huge credit to Eric Spoelstra and to all these players for finding their roles and playing their roles and not trying to worry too much about themselves. No one's selfish. No one's trying to do their thing. And think about it. They're missing two guys who, even if Oladipo, you know, he's not what he once was, but he's a guy who could score 15, 20 points in a game. Obviously, Tyler Hero obviously can score 20, 30 points in a game. He can go off. He's a sharp shooter. So even without those two guys, they keep winning, and it's unbelievable. And you go back, this team was down 6 with 5 minutes to go against the Bulls in the second play-in game after losing the first play-in game to the Hawks. And since then, they're 11-4 in the playoffs and 6-1 at home. They were 6-0 before losing game 4 at home against the Celtics. And you wonder why they're so good in all these games. And it seems like they're not blowing teams out, although they definitely, the game 3 was a blowout. The Celtics just gave up in game 3. But they didn't blow the Knicks out in particular in any game. But there's a stat that a lot of people are throwing out there now, that this team was incredible all year long, and we should have seen this coming, that they were so good in clutch games all year. And clutch games, I think, are defined like 5-point games with under 5 minutes to go, something like that. And the Heat have had an incredible job, have done an incredible job this year, I should say, winning those games. And one of the things I talked about with the Knicks earlier in this season was how earlier in the year they were losing all these close games late. And then they started finding ways to win them. And I said that was going to bode well for them in the playoffs. Well, the Heat are the ultimate example of that, where they're barely over 500 in the regular season, but all their wins were in these close games. They played in a ton of close games. They always make the right decisions. Again, a credit to Eric Spoelstra, who puts his guys late in games, has the best strategies, has the best defensive strategies, is putting his guys in a great position, but obviously credit to the players as well. And one of the things I looked at before this series was, I thought the Celtics were going to blow the Heat out. Like every series the Heat went into, I was like, this team is not that good. I just watched them play against the Knicks. We'll get to the Knicks a little bit later and their elimination in 6 games to Miami. Look, I thought they're not that good, right? I didn't think the Heat were that good, so I thought the Celtics were going to have an easy way with them, and the Celtics were honestly just going to pretty much handle the Heat. But one of the things we talked about was late in games when things break down, I don't trust Joe Mazzulla. I don't trust these guys. They have not been able to come up clutch. I always said I trust the Celtics when they were behind by like 20 points or ahead by 20 points. But in these close games, I was terrified of them. And then ultimately, I thought they captured these demons, though. It looks like they unlocked something in game 6. Starting in game 6, they were down. They were going to lose that game. And they unlocked something in Tatum, what he does in game 6, what he does in game 7, obviously, at home. It felt like all of a sudden the Celtics unlocked something. Joe Mazzulla, maybe they could win in spite of him. I know that's not necessarily what you want to do as a basketball team. But again, this team had the championship pedigree from last year. They went all the way to the finals. It's the same players. They should be a better team, right? Brogdon and White, these guys are better than they were last year. It didn't make sense that the Celtics would be this bad. So coming into this series against Miami, it's like, okay, this is awesome. We got this. We unlocked this. We figured this out. And we talked about this a little bit last summer with the Celtics, where when you have that opportunity, sometimes it doesn't ever come back. Even if the team's young, even if the team's special, we always talk about the Oklahoma City Thunder in 2012. That team never had that same opportunity again. They go to the finals. Obviously, it's different, right? They trade James Harden. But the way this series has gone, it felt like it broke the Celtics. I mean, just the fact that they let the Hawks linger. Obviously, they hung around with the Sixers. The Sixers almost beat them in 6 games when you look back at that series and how that played out. And now all the talk about Jaylen Brown being traded this year, I wouldn't break these two guys up. But look, that might have been, we might look back at the Celtics team like, oh my God, they made that one finals. They got close a bunch of times early. They made that one finals. They lost to the team with the pedigree, the team with the superstars and Steph Curry, obviously, and Golden State and everything they did. and they never made it back again. It was never the same again after that. Could we be saying that years from now, a few years down the road, 10, 12 years down the road, like we're doing now with OKC? Maybe. I talked about that last year. I talk about it with the Rangers all the time. You have to take advantage. They didn't take advantage last year. Who knows if they'll ever have that opportunity again. Obviously, this year went really poorly for them. But I don't understand. We're overreacting, I think, when you're talking about splitting up Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. Like, yes, this year did not go well, but think about how the year started with losing Ime Udoka and the head coach and everything that happened so far for the Celtics this season. I don't think it's going to be that bad again. It just, maybe it's me. Maybe I'm naive. Maybe I'm dumb. I just don't believe that it's going to be this bad again for the Boston Celtics. And I think they'll find a way. I think there's a way around this. There's a way out of this. If you're the Celtics, you could look at this and say, no, it can get better. This is not necessarily how bad it's going to be. And these two guys, you have two generational guys who play on the wing, who play together. There's no reason to break them up. They're not eliminated yet, so I'm not going to talk about that. Yeah, I'm not going to talk about their offseason plan and what that might look like, although a lot of people have already done that. But still, I thought they gave up in game three. I thought the season was over. And then they come back. I was shocked they won game four. They come back, and the way they looked in game four, they looked really good. They looked the way they looked at the end of the Sixers series. All of a sudden, they looked like that team again, which was the team that we saw last year, the team that we saw in the playoffs last year. So would I be shocked if somehow they found a way to keep that momentum going? Obviously, A-Rod and Jeter in the crowd. We know the only team, the Boston team, that came back from down 3-0, the 2004 Red Sox. No team has ever done it in the NBA. But now you go home for game five in Boston, right? Gabe Vincent, they just announced he's out. He's been a huge part of the series, obviously, for Miami. You start to believe a little bit. You start to think, well, if we win game four, or game five rather, at home, then all the pressure shifts back to Miami game six on their home court. And think about it, for one game, game six, who's the better team anyway? I'd much rather, like, still the better roster. If you look roster for roster, Russillo talked about this on his podcast. He's like, I guarantee you, he's like, if a Miami Heat fan tells you they wouldn't trade their roster today for the Celtics roster, they're lying to you. The Celtics roster is still top to bottom a much better roster. They're a much better team. They should have beaten the Heat. They shouldn't have ever been down 3-0 to the Heat. And all the crap they took from the TNT crew is because of that, because of the way they looked, because of the way they gave up. They had no fight in them. They didn't even care in the second period already of game three, the second quarter of game three. It seemed like they gave up, and it's like, yeah, whatever, we're going to start chucking threes. This game is over. And that's a crazy way to go out if you're a team that's supposed to be as good as the Celtics, a team that had championship aspirations, a team that was a number, you know, not a number one seed, but number two seed in the NBA. And yet still, it feels like, oh my God, if there's even the slightest chance, I'm not going to call this series over yet. I do think Miami will close it out. Again, if there's a close game, I trust the Heat still more than I trust the Celtics, even though the Celtics are a better team. But I don't know, if I'm the Heat, I want to close out tonight, and I'm sure there's nothing Jimmy Butler would want more than to go into Boston and close them out there. But if they win tonight, if the Celtics win tonight, all of a sudden, all those things are going to start coming back. Jeter and A-Rod, them being at game four, all the different things. Obviously, Boston, Kevin Millar, they're going to get the whole crew back together. Dave Roberts is going to steal second base again. And then before you know it, Poppy's going to be hitting a walk-off. So I don't know. There's something eerie about a Boston team being down 3-0 and then having this chance. Still, it's a wild chance. After game three, I would have told you the series is for sure over, even if Boston won a game. So why should I tell you now that Boston won one game that the series is not over? I don't know. We change our minds. We react in the moment to how things happen. So when things change, we change the way we look at them. It's kind of the way it's always gone. I always talk about that on the podcast, how, oh my God, one thing changes and then it changes the entire way we look at everything. But it's happening again. And I'm not even shocked. I can't even say I'm shocked that it's happening. Let's go to the other side. Let's talk about the Western Conference Finals for a minute. And as you see, it's going to be a quicker episode. I'm going to talk about my career a little bit at the end of it, but overall, it'll be a shorter episode than maybe I've done in the past, celebrating 150 with a bang, huh? And in the Western Conference Finals, I want to do what so many people have gotten hate for and what I've hated on other people for doing, but I'm going to do it anyway. I'm going to talk about the Lakers. No, I'm not ESPN. This isn't Fox Sports 1 or whatever, but I thought it was incredible that they made it this far. And I didn't think they had a chance. I thought they would lose in a play-in game. I thought they'd lose in the first round. I thought they'd definitely lose to the Warriors. And the fact that they did this, and LeBron was just awesome. This was one of the most incredible LeBron performances. And I'm not going to be a guy who's going to come out here and the first thing after a series ends, after a playoff ends, I'm not that guy who's going to go talking about how awesome LeBron is. I'll take any chance to be like, ha ha ha, LeBron, you lost. You got swept at home. Ha ha ha, you lost to Denver. Whatever. I would be that guy normally. But I saw something different. LeBron was exhausted. He left it all out there from the end of the season, the run, when he realized, hey, this team might actually have a chance after they made their trades. They go on a little bit of a run without him. Anthony Davis is healthy. All of a sudden, he's every single game. So much went on him to the point where game four, he didn't want to lose. He didn't want to get swept. The way he came out in game four hitting all those threes. First of all, why is he shooting so many threes? Because he couldn't even drive to the basket. He knew he's trying to conserve his energy. And Laker fans almost got to the point that they didn't want him shooting so many threes, but he had to because he just had nothing left. This was a guy who was exhausted, a guy who left it all out there, a guy who's 40 years old. He's not the player he once was, but he's still so incredible. And I thought this was one of the best performances we've seen out of him. It was appropriate the game ended with him just trying to get to the rim, two guys being on him, him trying to make something happen. I'm happy he attempted to take that shot because you know they double him. But if he attempts to pass it to someone else, we're like, oh, LeBron, look, he passed it to someone else. It's like, I'm going to take this shot. Ultimately, he doesn't get a shot off, but he was awesome. And think about it. They just ran out. They just didn't have enough. Every single game, they needed something to happen for them. They weren't as good as the teams they beat. And every single game, they needed incredible performance from LeBron. They needed a great AD performance. And then they also needed like Walker to go off in one game, or D'Angelo Russell to go off in one game, or Rui to go off in one game, or Reeves to go off in one game. And it seems like they got so many of that to the point where it just ran out. It wasn't going to happen again. It was too many times that they were relying on a crazy performance from someone. LeBron James plays all but 40 seconds in game four of this series. He played basically 47 minutes of this game, more than 47 minutes of this game. An unbelievable LeBron performance, any way you slice it. I know the second half wasn't as good as the first, but it was just an awesome performance. And where I really fell in love with him in this particular playoffs was his post game after game three. He didn't make any excuses. He said, look, look at the tape. It's one game at a time. He was as genuine in a press conference as I've seen him after game three. I'm not talking about after they got swept. I'm talking about when they were down 3-0. Everyone knows the storylines after game two were, haha, the home team hasn't won a game yet or hasn't lost a game yet. So it's not a series yet. The Lakers can still come back. The Lakers, they're going home now. They'll win two at home. And obviously Mike Malone got upset about that. He's like, how's the storyline still about the Lakers? They unlock something in game one. Now game two, they unlock something in game two. They're going home now, blah, blah, blah. How's the story not about us? And yet here I am still talking about the Lakers. And I'm saving the best for last, Denver. I'm going to talk about Denver in a second. But my point is, with all this, that eventually it was going to run out. And LeBron, game three was the game that you finally knew, okay, no, this run is over. They're down 3-0. They have the worst roster. The greatest player in the game today is just dominating them on every level, obviously in Nikola Jokic. And still, LeBron, after that game, he's like, look, credit to them. The other team was really good. I still believe in my guys. He didn't throw anyone under the bus. He wasn't making excuses. And of course, now the media is coming out saying LeBron is playing with a torn tendon in his foot that just came out throughout the entire playoffs. Of course he was. I mean, what's a LeBron elimination without a LeBron story coming out that he was really hurt the whole time? Right? It's never happened before that LeBron's either missed the playoffs or gotten eliminated. And we find out later from an odd source that he was playing hurt the whole time. It happens every year. But this what time, it doesn't feel like a weird kind of, I don't know, fake thing coming from LeBron that's ingenuine, because LeBron wasn't that. In this series, in this entire playoffs, he was a guy who was so easy to root for, and he showed you what a real superstar is in year 20, just trying to make it happen. And that's why when they asked him after the game about retirement, and he kind of left you on this cliffhanger where it sounds like, hey, maybe he will retire, maybe he won't retire, he's considering it. I don't think he's actually retiring, but I'm not that shocked. A guy who's exhausted, who had to put literally every ounce of his being into every moment of every game just to get them to this point, right after being eliminated in a sweep, that's where you're going to ask him about getting eliminated, about coming back next year and after having to put his body through all of this again. Of course he's going to say, I'm considering it. It's an emotional time. It's a tough time for him. What do you expect him to say after that? Especially if he actually has this injury that they're reporting that he might have. And the other thing is, LeBron's always going to do this. LeBron realizes that whether they have Anthony Davis, all these role players, they found something that worked. They need a real point guard. D'Angelo Russell was not that. Dennis Schroeder was not that. They need to alleviate some of the pressure from LeBron. In the second half of the game, Jeff Van Gundy kept saying, oh, just run more plays for LeBron. Get him to the paint. LeBron was exhausted. He couldn't do that anymore. So you have to find a way to alleviate some of that pressure. Someone who can play off him. Someone who can play. So LeBron wants to have that leverage where it's like, hey, Lakers, if you don't go out and get someone, I'm considering retiring. You know, if you guys don't draft my son in 2 years, I'm considering leaving. All those things that he talks about, he always plays his cards perfectly. He's always very calculated. This is no different than that. So I do believe that genuinely in the moment, he's thinking about the loss and he's thinking about having to put his body through everything. There was that one game, I think it was game two maybe, in Denver, where after the game, after the loss, you see him stop and like kind of take a deep breath before walking off the court. I think that was the game where he got stripped to end the game, right? You saw him just at the end of every single one of these games, he broke down. He needs to get to a point where he can play 36 minutes in these games and have someone else carry the team while he's out, and this team couldn't do it. If he was off the floor, they weren't going to be able to survive those runs with him off the floor, and so he can't do it all on his own. That's not LeBron anymore. It's, you know, it's sad to see, but it's still incredible to watch that there's a 40-year-old guy who, yeah, he can't do it all anymore, but he's still giving it his all, still trying to do it all. I think the next move for them is a point guard. So I think when he was saying hinting to retirement, it was the exhaustion, though. That was what he was hinting at. But the next move, like I said, probably get a point guard, probably get a real somebody, whether it's Kyrie Irving, which I know the rumors are swirling about that. I don't know who it is. I don't know how they can make a move when a lot of these guys that they have are going to be free agents anyway. They don't have any draft picks. So where does this move come from? I'm not quite sure. Does Anthony Davis get moved? Because he couldn't carry this team without LeBron on the floor. So it's like Anthony Davis is great because he's grabbing rebounds and he scores a ton of points. But if he can't carry a team on his own, if he can't be that guy, which everyone thought by this point, you know, you get to this point, he'd be fine, you know, with LeBron on the bench. He'd be the guy who you can go to, you could turn to. He hasn't been that guy. So the question is, where do you go to next from here? And I don't know the answer. I really don't. But the Lakers are going to have to figure that out. Now for the Nuggets. And of course, classic media, I talked about the Lakers first. But you want more classic media? This is my ESPN moment right now. You ready? I don't like being one of those talking heads on ESPN who says all these crazy things. But Nikola Jokic is pretty much the greatest offensive player I've ever seen. And I'm pretty sure I can say that with certainty. Nikola Jokic, what he did in this playoff series and what he's done throughout the entire playoffs is unbelievable. Last 5 minutes of a game, when the game slows down in the playoffs, everything turns into a half-court game. That's the time it's the most important, and that's the time he turns into the best player in the world. You know he's going to get a bucket every single time down the floor. This is a guy who you come down the floor, you don't need him to shoot. It's almost like shooting is the last resort. They're going to run a little screen and roll. He's going to have the ball at the top of the key, and if you step up on him, he'll drive past you. If you sag off him, he'll shoot. But if you double him, he's going to find the open man. They run a little small action. He always finds the perfect man in the perfect spot. You know he's going to get one of his teammates an easy bucket. He's the guy that if you put him on any team in the league, he'd be incredible, and that team probably becomes the best team in the league. Because every single time down the floor, they can score. And by the way, his shooting is his last resort, and yet he hit the most incredible shot we've ever seen where he just takes that step back three, and then he seals the game driving to the rim with a layup. Like, those two shots tell you that if he decided that he wanted to be a guy who shoots 20 times a game, which he's not, like I said, shooting is his last resort, but if he was a shoot-first guy, he'd score 45 points a game because he could score at will. He scores at ease. And yet still, every single time down, he's looking for the best shot, looking for the best play for his teammates, and his teammates are so involved the whole game that when you get to that fourth quarter and he needs them to make a play, they're ready to make a play because they've been involved, they've been in the action the entire game. I've never seen a better offensive player in my life. That's my opinion, because he'll get you a bucket anyway, whether it's him, whether it's someone else. You can't double him. You can't stop him one-on-one. There is no solution to him. I don't know what to tell you. The best offensive player I've ever seen, I said it. And what's so funny about it is he didn't care about the MVP down the stretch. They started losing games. He's slacking off on D. He's conserving his energy for the playoffs. And now he's made everyone else around him look stupid for not voting for him for the MVP. Because of what he's done in these playoffs, where it's like, oh yeah, right, he's the best player in the world, we forgot. And all these people coming out here now and going to tell you how great Joel Embiid is, or how great Nikola Jokic is, voted for Joel Embiid. So, I don't know what to tell you. Speaking of, I do think that I can't see them losing to the Heat, right? Like, I can't see them losing to the Heat at all, but I also kind of, I guess I'd give the Celtics a little bit more of a chance, which is funny. If the Celtics do come out, somehow come back and come back from a 3-0 deficit and beat Miami especially, they'll have some momentum. But it's truly hard to imagine this Nuggets team, the way they're playing right now, losing to anyone. But we said that about the Heat so many times, right? We said that about the Heat. Like I said, with the Celtics, I don't see them losing to the Celtics, but I definitely don't see them losing to the Heat. But we've said this about the Heat a million times. We talked about the MVP. Look, Joel Embiid, congrats. You cried for the MVP. You got the MVP. You happy now? What do you want, a cookie? No, I guess you want the MVP. You got the MVP. But the funny thing about that, we talked about this earlier with Jimmy Butler. Now that you have the MVP, we look at you as even more of a loser. You were so sad that you didn't get all these MVPs. I should have gotten the MVP persona. Yeah, well, guess what? Now you get the MVP, so all the pressure's on you, buddy. And you lost in the playoffs again. And when you had a lead at home in Game 6, you disappeared. And you did the same thing again in Game 7. You rolled over and you lost in Game 7 on the road. So all those playoff games that you lost were your fault. They're on you. You're the MVP, right? You should have taken your team out of it. You should have helped your team. You should have at least done something down the stretch instead of doing nothing at all, which is actually what you did. So Joel Embiid, you happy you won? I hope you're happy with your MVP, because now when people didn't blame you previously for playoff losses and people looked at you as a guy who, this is a great player who hasn't just done it yet in the playoffs, but eventually he'll do it. He's going to win in the playoffs. Now you're a guy who, this is an MVP who can't get it done in the playoffs because he's not a real MVP. And we're seeing what a real MVP looks like on the other side, where when his team's down late, when his team is tied late, when he needs a big bucket, when they need to stop a run, they don't roll over. They look to him and he gets it done. Every single time. That's Nikola Jokic, not Joel Embiid. Just saying. Speaking of the Sixers, everything that's happened with them, they fired Doc. Harden's probably going to be gone, although you don't want to lose that asset for nothing, but I'm not giving James Harden 4 years, $200 million. I'm not the Houston Rockets. Where do they go? I don't think they blow it up. I don't think they trade Embiid. It's not the right move. I just said this with the Celtics. Even if the Celtics lose tonight, I don't think you split up Jaylen and Jason. Same thing all over again. We'll talk about the offseason a little bit later. Speaking of the offseason, my New York Knicks have a lot to do because it's the offseason for them now, and I haven't talked about it since they've been eliminated, and there's a lot to get to. But I want to go back because, to me, the season ended in Game 4. In Miami, you had so many chances to win that game. You give up 7 offensive rebounds in the fourth quarter, and you turn the ball over, I think, 4 or 5 times down the stretch of that fourth quarter also. That was when you lost that series. And Game 6, look, you tried in Game 6. It came down, you had a 2-point game with Jalen Brunson had the ball. But it starts with Game 4 because you had to win Game 4. They lost Game 4 the way they lost it. And they lost Game 4 because of one person, and that's Julius Randle. I can't defend him anymore. There's nothing left to say about him, but Julius Randle in that game gave zero effort, didn't care, said after the game that the other team wanted it more than us, or maybe that was even after Game 3, but Game 4 was pathetic. I think it was actually after Game 4. There's nothing left I can say to defend him, because you give zero effort unless you think you're getting 2 points. He's dragging his feet on defense. He's playing a zone while everyone else is playing man. He's just standing out there. He got beat to the basket by his guy so many times on those rebounds, so many second chance opportunities. If he gives a tiny bit of effort in that game, and this is what's so upsetting to me. They showed a video of the Knicks, because after the Nuggets made the playoffs, somebody posted a video of the Denver Nuggets, the Knicks beating them in Denver this year, and Julius Randle's diving on the floor for a loose ball and passing it ahead to Brunson for a layup. Like, where was that in the playoffs? And I think at the beginning of Game 6, he tried. Like, he actually gave a little bit of an effort at the beginning of Game 6. He had that chase down block. It looked like he... But once he starts missing his shots, he's checked out. It's like, I don't know how a guy who just totally emotionally falls apart every time his shot isn't going in, I can't understand that. I can't wrap my head around it. And I can never get behind that guy again. This is the final straw, because how can you be checked out like that? In those games, he was checked out in Game 6. He was checked out in Game 4. And if it weren't for him being benched for an extended period of Game 5, I think he would have been checked out in Game 5 too, because he was to start the game. Here's the story with Julius Randle. He was on really, really thin ice with Knicks fans after last year, when he gave them the thumbs down, when the season just went horribly, coming off of a great magical season where he's the most improved player and he's all the different things that he did the previous season. But then you're on thin ice after you give him the thumbs down, you're talking bad about the fans, you're not giving effort. All New Yorkers care about is effort. I've said this 1,000 times on this podcast. It's all sports fans in New York want to see is just showing you that you care, right? And this guy, it didn't seem like he cared at all, and he didn't want to be here anymore. Somehow the Knicks decided to stick with him, and it was one of the greatest New York redemption stories. I talked about it so many times on this podcast. What a great redemption story it was for Julius Randle coming back in 2022. The help of Jalen Brunson, making it to the All-Star team again, being a third-team All-NBA player, all the different things. He re-ingratiates himself to the fans. His kid is back in the stands. His wife is there. We love him again, but don't forget you're still on the thinnest of ice. Yeah, don't let it get to your head that you had this awesome comeback season. Because the second you showed signs of being the guy from last year and less of the guy from 2 years ago, this city was ready to turn on you in an instant. The fans gave him a pass when he performed poorly and they lost in 5 games in 2021. That's not when the fans turned on him. Don't get it twisted. They didn't turn on him because of bad performance. They turned on him because of lack of effort, because of not caring, because of booing the fans. That's when they turned on him. So you come back this year in this year's playoffs after having one of the greatest redemption seasons and you do this and this is the effort you give in the playoffs. Now what's great for Julius Randle is that Miami beat Giannis. Miami's going to beat the Celtics. And it seems like Miami was just on a roll and they couldn't be stopped. And you're just another team that lost, so maybe people will forget about you. So credit to the organization for sticking with you and raising your value, but hopefully one of the other teams around the league didn't watch the games as closely as Knicks fans did and is willing to take you, because this franchise can't do it again. I will never trust this guy again. No matter what, I'm done. You have to trade him no matter what. You brought his value back up. Last year would have been a terrible time to trade him. His value was at an all-time low. Now's the time you trade him. It's no, even if you have to take a little bit of a hit in the value you get in return. I'm not being an emotional fan about this. He needs to be gone. And I could tell you why I'm not being an emotional fan. Ryan Russillo, he said he watched game 4. He did a whole open about this. After the game, he did 20 minutes on Julius Randle alone. He said, I couldn't take my eyes off him. All I could watch was Julius Randle. And he's not a guy who gets overly emotional, and he's not a Knicks fan. He doesn't care. He has no agenda. But he's telling you what he saw. He said, the only time I saw him hustle, so it couldn't have been an injury, because every time he thought he had a chance at 2 points, he hustled and he went hard. The offensive fouls, I should say, just barreling into the lane at the end of that game. And then in game 6 down the stretch, he just didn't even want the ball. He's like, Brunson, you go do something. I guess the third quarter of game 5, you have that to lean on. But you can't have a guy who every time it starts not going his way a little bit, is just dragging his feet in transition every time. How many times was he the guy closest to the Knicks basket after an offensive possession and he lets the outlet, he lets someone get behind him because he's dragging his feet back? How many times is he arguing with the ref instead of getting back on defense? I can't ever watch that again. I'm done with it. He needs to be traded. They'd be better off with a guy like Marcus Morris or any just random role player. I'd say Tobias Harris. Take someone else's bad contract. And I know he can be traded, by the way, because guess what? Last year, Rudy Gobert was traded. Rudy Gobert was coming off a game where he was being benched in the playoffs. And he was still traded for a ton. Think about what they gave up for him. So someone's going to trade for Randle. Say, hey, here's a big guy who can go in the lane. He can also shoot a little bit. When he wants to, he plays defense. I don't know what team doesn't want him. A team that has a great point guard and is looking for a little size, another guy who can shoot a little bit. I don't know. A bunch of teams would want him. I don't want it to be that same team that got Rudy Gobert, because I don't want Karl Anthony Towns. I'll tell you that right now. He doesn't like basketball that much. He's not a winning player. But it has to be done. He has to be gone for whoever it is. And I wish him well, because I loved him at times. Julius Randle is not a player that I hate. I love Julius Randle at times. I really did. To me, he's like Sonny Gray or Joey Gallo, who they just couldn't hack it with his team. And the ironic part is both those guys are now in Minnesota. So I still don't want Karl Anthony Towns. I don't want to send Julius Randle to Minnesota. But those are two guys who just, it didn't work for them. It couldn't happen in New York. Some guys who have a little bit, they're a little bit more emotional, whatever it is, whatever the case may be. Randle's obviously one of those guys, and it's never going to work for him here. Who is that guy who it can work for, who gave it his all, who was getting harassed the entire playoffs, double teamed, picked up in full court, They're using him in every screen, going at him on defense, and yet he still every single time came through for this team. That was Jalen Brunson. He couldn't play 48 minutes again in game 6. That was unfortunate. But still, when he had the ball down 2, that's all I could have asked for. He drove right into a double team. They used the baseline as a third defender. He turns it over. That was it. That was the game. But down 2, the ball in Jalen Brunson's hands, I had all the confidence in the world. The fact that he couldn't sit it all hurt the Knicks also. And this comes back to Emmanuel quickly. The Knicks were like plus 70 with Brunson on the floor. And every time he was off the floor, they were like minus 70. So the Brunson on-off minutes were something to look at, obviously. And Emmanuel quickly contributes to that because they just had no one to run the offense without Brunson. He was everything for them. And part of that is Randall just couldn't be good enough. If Randall was Randall, then he survived those minutes. I guess I should say regular season Randall. In other Knicks news, Carmelo Anthony retired. I'm done talking about. Well, by the way, we'll do a whole offseason podcast and we'll talk about the Knicks. As one of the teams, all these teams we talked about, the Sixers, the Lakers, so much, even Boston, so much that's going to happen in this offseason, obviously, and we'll get to all that a little bit later. It's a long, long summer and I can't talk about baseball. Let's talk about Carmelo Anthony, one of my favorite Knicks ever, who decided to call it quits, retire. He wanted to play this year. It didn't work out. And I don't know if this is revisionist history because Carmelo Anthony, I loved him as a Knick while he was here. Obviously, there were some tougher times. Also, when I met him, I remember it changed the way I thought about him because when I met Carmelo Anthony, all of a sudden it changed the way I looked at him. First of all, my first thought was he's actually really skinny. Wow, this guy's in incredible shape because he always looked a little bit chubbier on the court than some of the other guys because he had a really round face. No, this guy, I met him like towards the end of his Knicks career when people really thought he was letting go of his body. No, he was in incredible shape, like six pack, everything. So that was just a flaw in how a character judgment, but that's not what I'm here to talk about. The other thing was he cared so much. He was happy. He was a fun guy. He cared about the fans. He loved the fans. This is the year that Derrick Rose disappeared. They had Kristaps Porzingis already. This is the end of his Knicks tenure. And he was so nice to us. He talked basketball with us. I told him, like, dude, like, I remember joking with him. I was like, my friend here, he's a huge Knicks fan. He's obsessed with you. And he's like, yeah. He's like, I love the fans. I love being a Knick. I love being here. This is awesome. Like, he wanted to be a Knick. He wanted to be here and he wanted to be the man. And you look at some of those teams, you go back and watch those highlights. Of course, my first, like, my greatest, it's not the first, just this is my greatest Carmelo Anthony memory as a Knick. Is the game on Easter. It was Passover also. It was when he has the game against Chicago after Steve Novak misses a three and then Derrick Rose misses 2 free throws. Carmelo Anthony comes down the other way, hits a three to tie the game, sends it to overtime. In overtime, they're down 5, I think. And then he obviously comes back, has an and one down the stretch. And then he passes it. He actually makes the right move, passes it to J.R. Smith for a wide open three. It gets missed. Tyson Chandler tips it out, and then Melo goes one-on-one, and then puts it in with 8.2 remaining, Knicks by one. You know, the whole Mike Breen thing that he did there. I messed it up. It's puts it in, Knicks by one with 8.2 remaining. Yeah, I know it by heart. Don't worry. I've watched that play. I've watched the replay of that game 1,000 times. The 54 win season, there were so many special moments for the Knicks. And think about it. Even the playoffs, his first playoffs as a Knick, he carried the team. They scored like 80 points in Boston in one game, and he had 45 of the 80 points. Like, he was carrying the team at all times, and he was carrying trash most of the time. After those first 3 years, the roster was terrible. It was desolate. They couldn't get anything together. Think about how many draft picks they missed on while he was here with Ntilikina. I think one of the picks also was Knox. So many draft picks that they messed up. The best team that they put around him after those first couple of years was with Derrick Rose and Kristaps Porzingis. And they already, I don't even think they had Tim Hardaway Jr. at that point anymore. Maybe they still did. But the point is, this team just, they couldn't put a good team around him. That didn't change him. He was so clutch. I mean, think about how many big shots he won. He has, since 1996, I think is the year, no one has made more game-winning shots than Carmelo Anthony. And think about how many game-tying shots. That doesn't include any of those. No one in the league has made more game-winning shots since 1996, and Carmelo Anthony has 20. Kobe was second with 19. This guy was so clutch for this Knicks team every time they needed a big game, and he was a guy who embraced being here, who wanted to be here, who in the biggest stages performed at his best. I wish, I don't know, in an alternate universe, we could combine societies. And it's funny, I was talking about this before he retired. I was thinking about this while I was on the bus to the city, and I was thinking about this the other day. And this was before he announced his retirement. I was watching Melo highlights, and I was like, wow, I just wish Melo and and Brunson's paths could have crossed on the Knicks at the same time. Maybe we could mix the timelines because they would have been so perfect together. Having a point guard who can take some of the stress off of Melo, but having that guy who's the closer like Melo, who can be out there and wants to take all these big shots. It's a shame, and I hope the Knicks can find someone else to be that guy. But I definitely think history serves Carmelo well because, I don't know, you look back and you look at Julius Randle, for example, and you're like, yeah, I would take Melo over him. It's so special to have a guy who wants to be here, who wants to be the man, and when he comes here, he answers the call every single time. That's special. I'm going to quickly talk about my career now for a little bit. And the update is that I started working, if you follow me on social media, you know this. I started working for The Fan and CBS Sports Network. What my job and my role is there, I don't know, really. It's kind of interesting. It's kind of why I posted it on a Friday, kind of like as a news dump, and now it's Memorial Day weekend, and that's when I'm recording this, which is funny. But it's starting to become a little bit more clear. I've had some conversations with some more people, and definitely we're working on some stuff. But the point is, I have this recognition. I'm going to stay with Odyssey, which I've loved being a part of Odyssey since day one. And my bosses in Baltimore reached out to Spike Eskin here in New York, who's the program director, and said, hey, you just give this kid a chance. He's talented. And I was working on it for a long time. It's what I talked about. I thought it was going to happen sooner, but it happened finally. I was in the building. Just being in that building, this is the reason I want to do this. Growing up listening to Boomer and Carton, and now listening to Craig and Evan in the afternoon, listening to Boomer and Gio in the morning. I have so many friends there who I've met in some way through social media, and it was so cool when they all reached out to me. And when I met them, obviously some of them I had met in person already, some of them I hadn't, but when I hung out with them at the studios. So I started just, kind of back to ground one, back to level one, like I was doing in Baltimore, cutting tape late at night. That's kind of how I started. But it was just so cool. I had one day last week that was awesome. I had a full day of work. I was working remote for Major League Baseball. So I was in Midtown in Manhattan working remote for Major League Baseball in a WeWork. Then I had a meeting with a couple of sports executives from another major sports network. And we'll see what that leads to. But it was just a meeting with them. And then I went straight from there, took the subway down to WFAN. And just that hustle bustle, living that life where I worked, 12 hours straight that day. But I loved every second of it. It was awesome. It was super cool. This is what I signed up for. This is what I want my life to be. This is what I'm stimulated by. It's not about the money at this point. It's not about the title at this point. It's about feeling like I'm working towards something. Like, this is something I care about. This is a goal that I have. And this is where I want to be. This is what I want to be doing. And this feels like the next step, that I'm going to be in that building with that brand recognition, the first sports talk anything. They invented sports talk practically, right? With sports talk radio that they have with WFAN. I get to be in that building with those people, with that tradition, and hopefully be part of what is the next wave of sports media and bring something new and young and energy to that radio station, and also be a sponge and take in everything that they have to offer. So it's going to be super cool. Like I said, I started cutting tape, but obviously my experience in Baltimore hopefully will lead to more opportunities there in the future. A funny story, just if you want a quick story from that day, I was on the subway. This is actually really funny. I was just sitting on the subway and this woman sits down next to me. This is just like classic, like New York City, living that life. It's 1 o'clock in the morning. I'm taking the subway, to get a ride back, to where I live. And I get on the subway and it's about 1 a.m. and it's after, like I said, 12 hours straight of work, and some old tourist lady sits down and she uses my leg as like leverage to sit down. She like puts her arm on my leg and slowly like leans down to sit down. Just stuff like that. And like any other day, I would have been like, what the hell is going on? Who the heck is this lady? Why is she doing this to me? And on that day, I was like, oh, this is awesome. I love this. This is part of my life now. And it's perspective. It's how you look at things. But it's also when things are going well, you have to remember these good times. I also did want to mention this because at times when things weren't going well, when I moved here, I was like, why did I leave a situation that's good? You could feel sometimes stuck and feel like things aren't going like you planned. And sometimes it's the worst feeling in the world. And so just remember, not everything's bad. Things look up eventually. Things get better. The reason I mentioned that is because there was a guy who was a caller. I'm not going to mention his name. He was a pretty regular caller in Baltimore at WF or The Fan in Baltimore. And he was getting harassed on Twitter. He was famous on like Ravens and Orioles Twitter. had like, you know, 15,000 followers and was the whole community, the whole fan base knew him, but apparently he was getting harassed on social media. And he was one of those people who felt like he didn't know, he felt stuck and he felt like he didn't know how things were going to change. And things do get better, especially if you reach out to people you love. He decided that things were not going to get better and he took his own life, and it was just awful. So I always talk about mental health at the beginning of the podcast. My sponsor, BetterHelp, that's a great way to go. But use the code Rami, obviously, not to turn this into an ad, but use the code Rami if you want 10% off your first month of online therapy. But just remember, you know, things get better. I talked about it a few weeks ago on the podcast. I talked about how I wasn't exactly where I wanted to be, and now it feels like I'm there, and still I'm not quite there yet. Things do still need to change. My career is not perfect. Nothing is set in stone. I'm still working. There's still a lot to get to. There's still a lot to do to make this my dream and make my dream come true. But just remember, if you listen back to that episode and you hear what I said on that episode about how I didn't even know what was going to come next to get to this point where I'm at now, where I feel like the jubilation that I felt walking into that building and feeling an actual part of it, and even sitting on the subway at 1 a.m. and having a lady use my leg as a footrest or as a leverage bar felt like the greatest thing in the world. It's anything can change in a minute. So just keep that in mind, and whatever you're trying to go for, whatever you are working towards, keep going at it, because it's only up from here. So I appreciate all you guys. Until next time, keep listening, keep sharing. None of this would be possible without you. Everything that happens in my career, I attribute back to this podcast and the people who believe in me and listen from day one. So keep doing that, because it means so much to me. And hopefully the benefit, and I guess the payoff for you guys, would be to see that because of you guys, my career got to where I want it to be. So hopefully it'll keep going because of you. And until next time, I will talk to you all later. Have a happy Memorial Day weekend. You were the best nights of my life. You got the light that always shines. I miss the way that you move and the way I get high when you take me to your heights, like I'm standing in the sky. I see your subway cars and your old graffiti. I breathe your air when I land in another city. I'll be that one that's got you printed on my bones. I know. Everywhere I go, oh, oh, I change it up, oh, oh, always on my road, I'm still New York. You're the only, oh, 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 that I'll ever know, oh, oh, my concrete walls, I'm still New York, I'm still New York. Ooh. Oh, I'm still New York. Yeah, I wanna drive down Riverside, see the birds flying on the high line. Sidewalks burning, we pray for rain in July. I want the Yankees 99, yeah, and the Knicks on a sold out night. When the curtains close and the Broadway streets are alive, hey. I need your heartbeat close, don't you ever leave me. And I breathe your air when I land in another city. And I'll be that one that's got you printed on my bones. I was godsend. I used to hit them courts yard and prospect. Take them long walks on my time spent. Just a kid with that empire state of mindset. Kick flipping off a blind deck. Dipping from the New York City's finest. Yeah, said I've been up on my New York shit. Walking down the block with my New York bitch. I can never leave my city, ain't nothing like it. Even if I do though, I can never hide it. Top down on the west side when I'm driving. East side be the only side that I'm riding. And I'm still New York. I'm still New York. And I'm still New York. I'm
ain't changed at all. No, I ain't changed at all. I'm still young.